This is a special extended edition of Minnesota Native News. I'm Marie Rock. Weeks after the ice has melted on Net Lake and the trees have leafed out, it's time for Sagi Baga. The people who gather at the grounds on the shores of Net Lake come with stories. They come with dreams of jingle dresses and host drums. They have homecoming tales and remembrances of those who've passed on. They have wisdom for the next generation. Britt Ahmet travels north to the Boys Fort Reservation for its annual spring powwow. These are just some of the stories collected at Sagi Baga Days 2015.
Dancers, founders, chanters, two-steppers, right next to the MC stand. Registration is now open.
By noon, the powwow grounds are set up. Booths are set up. Food smells catch on the breeze off Net Lake. In an hour, grand entry starts. People slowly fill the covered stands. Some have brought lawn chairs. The sun shines and kids play. It looks like Sagi Baga 2015 is going to have one of those perfect blue sky days.
Dancers, start making your way to the MC's table here. Come register your drums, put down all your relatives as your singers again.
Hi, my Anishinaabe name is Gika Benesik.
Billie Joe Barons is one of the first to arrive. She's brought her jingle dress with her, but it's still in her bag.
I came from Virginia, Minnesota. I just came up with my mom and my dad and came up to spend the day dancing. I actually dreamt of my dress, and I had a dream that I seen the top half of a dress, and it was black, red, yellow, and orange. And it had long fringe coming down from the arms, and it had little small tiny jingles on it. And I remember seeing it in my dream hanging on the back of my door to my bedroom. And I remember playing with them jingles, and I talked to my mom after that, and she said, "Well, sounds to me like we're going to have to make you a jingle dress, and since those colors came to you in your dream, then those are the colors that were supposed to make your dress." The first couple dresses that I had made were those colors, and my grandma got sick of making the same dress over and over, so she talked me into changing the colors. My mom's the one who got me into dancing. You know, I used to be just a little girl following around behind my mom when she was dancing, and I just pretty much grew up around, you know, powwows and learning the traditions, and became a jingle dress dancer because, I don't know, it just seems like that's where I was drawn to, and that's the style that my mom dances, and the jingle dress dancers are considered to be like the healers, I guess. Oh, it makes me feel good because my birthday is actually in like, I don't know, geez, like 2 weeks maybe? It's on the 19th of this month. So this is kind of my birthday celebration, I guess. I come out here every year during the summer and come dance, and I don't know what, I've never lived up here or anything, but it almost feels like, you know, like coming home when you moved away, you know, it just makes you feel really good.
Where there's a powwow, there's bound to be good food. Liz Wakanabu travels to 18 different powwows during the season. Friends and family help in the cook tent, taking orders, making sandwiches, and frying bread.
That's everything I make back there.
What are you making?
We have fry bread, we have fries, we have chili cheese fries, we have tacos, we have hominy soup, we have wild rice soup, burgers. Tacos. We have over 100 items on our menu. Everything's wrapped in fry bread, Oreos, candy bars. We have s'mores, we have corn dogs, we have pizza pockets, we have anything. If you bring me something to wrap in fry bread, you want to try it, I'll wrap it for you.
What What's the most unusual thing you've ever wrapped in fry bread?
A slice of pizza. They ordered a slice of pizza and they wanted it wrapped in fry bread.
What would a powwow be like without food?
Boring.
Denise, Alexis, and Ariana are the youngest members of Liz Wakanabu's food crew.
Tell me what you have in your hands right there.
A hairnet.
And why do you, all three of you, have hairnets?
So we won't get our hair in it?
Yeah, when we go into the kitchen so we don't get our hair in the food. Like we would do chili cheese fries and french fries, and we'll make the tacos.
Our favorite is the Big Red Challenge.
Yeah, we all want to do it.
What is it?
It's a challenge of
2 1-pound burgers and a family of chili cheese fries and a 20-ounce
root beer float.
And you have to do it all in 30 minutes.
Has anybody ever done it?
Yes.
Nobody has ever succeeded it, though.
Nobody's ever won. What about this year?
Nope.
You have to register by 4.
It's hard to
And be there at, like, sometime around 5:30.
How much does it cost?
$25.
If you eat all of it, it's free.
Yeah, you get 30 minutes. Or $75 free if you eat it all.
Plus the free meal.
The girls tell me they know someone else I should interview. They race ahead to a large food van blazoned with a fried chicken motif.
Bobby.
They circle a man with a beard and a baseball cap.
Some people want to meet you.
What's happening?
Oh, so you're Bobby. You guys just moved here from California.
Bobby Macheski from San Diego. Can you just calm down, young lady? San Diego transplant. My dad brought me out here to run this lovely Big Daddy Chicken. It's a catering company also, but it's mainly focusing on fresh chicken. I came up last year and did the trail most of the summer, and then went back for a snowflake. I went back to Denver and got out of here before the snow. And then he talked me into coming back up here and sold my house in Denver and said, why not? I had a blast last year. And everybody's really just nice. And once you get in, it takes a little bit, but as soon as you're recognized, it's a very nice conglomerate of folks. We're from Cloquet. That's where I grew up, basically, on the Fond du Lac Reservation. But that's what brought me back, too, is just the dancing and the campsites. Everybody's cool, and we trade, we barter. There's, you need something, all you do is go right next door. That's it. And everybody's been pretty cool.
This was part of your life when you were young.
Yeah, when I was a kid.
What did it feel like coming back?
That's it. Like I said, intense, just really overwhelming, kind of undescribable. It took me 2 days to realize actually where I was at, you know, because that first drum beat in the morning and you wake up to that, and then it's all day long.
Sorry.
Granted, we work for 3 days straight, and then so it's kind of a little overwhelming anyway, and then you add the dance into it, and you add the singing and the draw. It's just powerful, powerful.
Some years ago, Elaine Tibbetts moved to Bemidji, though she always comes back to Net Lake.
I really feel like I'm very fortunate. You know, when I was a kid, I had a paper route and sold the grid paper. And that's how I made my spending money, because my mom didn't have a lot of money. And sometimes I was able to get my school clothes or whatever. But I would go around before these roads were built, on the old roads. And when I'd go into like an elder's home, they're so hungry for companionship, someone to talk to, you know, they'd have their 35 cents sitting on the corner of the table, but yet I was very fortunate to hear stories from these elders. I consider myself very, very lucky. There used to be houses there, there used to be a house right here, you know. And we used to, they have up there, it's called the Big Rock, we used to go up there and slide until we'd tear our pants open, you know. And you know, I used to come up here and hit the reservation line and I used to feel like I was coming home. But my oldest sister passed this year. And she'd be sitting right up there by the memorial in her wheelchair. And this year I didn't have that feeling when I drove in. I said, I don't even feel like this is home anymore. so I don't know if it has something to do with her. Because she was like a mom to me. We have some friends that live in Cass Lake, and there was the young lady that passed, and her brother had a dream about a dress. So they come to me and gave me tobacco and asked me if I could make this dress. And they told me the colors, everything, so I made the dress. And I was instructed to wear the dress for a year and then pass it on to someone that would wear it out in the ring for this girl that had passed. So at that time, I passed it on to my younger sister, Linda Tibbetts-Bardo. And she now wears the blue dress for this young lady that has passed.
So how did it feel wearing that dress?
It was very special. I felt very blessed, you know, wearing it. I mean, I knew I was dancing for her when I wore it. And I know my sister does too.
People of all ages find their way to Sagi Baga. Harvey Thompson was born into the traditions at Net Lake. Now he's among the elders, a memory keeper of then and now.
We didn't have no transportation back when I was little. So we had powwows here that we attended, and we didn't go any other place. Okay, I remember a long time ago when my grandpa had a little, kind of like a little drum in the evening, starting around maybe 5 or 6 o'clock. He would sit outside of his little shack, and he'd be pounding drum by himself. Then all of a sudden, other old people would come by him, and they'd sit around. Then they'd bring out a regular drum like this here, bring it out, and they'd all start pounding and singing. And next thing you know, other people came by, and they were dancing around. Then they'd pick up a spot, like under a light. Then they'd sit there, and then they'd pound into the nighttime, and they'd have their little powwow like that. And it would take just one person to start it. Start singing in the afternoon or evening, yeah. And that's how I remember seeing powwows here. You know, they had just about every evening. It wasn't organized, no. The first Sagi Baga day that I remember, they had it right there. And I remember they had a big Ferris wheel they brought in here. And that kind of drew in a lot of non-natives in here to come and watch our powwow. So, yeah, that was the first Sagi Baga powwow that they ever had.
Do you remember when that was? How old were you?
Oh, man, I was just a little young guy then. Maybe about 10 years old or something like that. I love powwows. Because you get to meet a lot of people from different reservations, and knowing people, getting to knowing people. I love the music. When I was young, I used to dance too, you know. I never had a regalia like they do now. We'd just go ahead and go out and dance. And I never sang on a drum, but I like dancing.
Somebody was telling me that, I don't know if this was a long time ago, but young men and women used to meet at powwows.
Well, that's, yeah, they still do that. They still kind of they call it a snagging, and going, well, we'll go to this powwow next weekend and see if we can get a snag. I'm meaning try to find themselves a girlfriend or a boyfriend or something like that. And yeah, that happens.
Did that ever happen to you?
The first powwow, like I said, the first Sagi Baga powwow, I remember meeting a girl. And yeah, then I took her on a Ferris wheel quite a few times, and I got to know her. Snagged her.
Were you sweet on her?
I liked her, yeah. She I think she liked me too, but then, like I said, I didn't have no transportation. I couldn't go visit her, you know, that was just a one-time thing. We could write letters, but eventually that kind of died out too.
Whatever happened to her?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Do you ever wonder about her?
Yeah, I wonder about. I meet, you know, quite. I used to meet quite a few girls at powwows. Then you'd go part your ways, and then you think about them later. What are they doing? Where are they at? You know, wonder if I could see her again.
It's midday, and storm clouds have pushed from the north. The blue skies turn gray and pour. All around, tents are quickly being disassembled. Booths are trucked piece by piece to the government center. The powwow is headed indoors. But not everyone is rushing out of the rain.
My name is Baybob Inibines. That means the Thunderbird is around. He's around all over. I was named by a fellow by the name of Walter Drift. I took his name. That big jack pine right there, that's by my house. See that big jack pine on this? You see it sticking up there by itself. That's where his house was. He was an elder, and he's also basically a spiritual advisor. You know, and he knew many, many things, and he was wise. He's an old man. I think he said he went to the second grade, but he died an old man. And he was really, really knowledgeable as to who he was. And he saw me and named me as what I have today, who I am today, because he must have saw something. Eventually he's going to come back and learn who he is, which I did. Or I am, I should say, which I am doing today.
What did a powwow mean to you when you were little?
And nothing.
It didn't mean anything?
No. Nope. It was just a celebration. Because I didn't even know who I was. I was just someone running around the res here as a little boy, you know. I've seen ceremonies and things like that, but it didn't have that much to do with it. I didn't have much to do with it. My grandmother used to maybe go sit and talk to me, and I'd sit there and, well, what am I doing over here? My friends over here are riding bicycles. Why am I here? You know. But I remember all that stuff. All the way up until I was about 20 years old, maybe. I always had to see what was over the hill. And that meant leaving here. I couldn't wait to leave home. I couldn't imagine what I did to my mom when I wanted to leave. But I did.
You left and went to the war.
Yep. I took a course when I got out of the war in Vietnam called Contemporary Indian Life or Studies. Contemporary. And I started listening. And I thought, well, geez, I see a lot of white people here trying to learn how to be Indians, and I'm already one of these people. Why should I have to learn? Then I started remembering all these other things that were going on in my life. You know, as far as our culture is concerned. And I found that rather intriguing, even though I was left behind as far as the language is concerned. I went across the river up there, and that's where I mingled with a lot of people up there. And these kids, mind you, were speaking well. And I, over time, I don't know everything there is to know, but I know enough to get by. And at my point, I'm 68 years old. And right now, at my point in time, why should I have to learn who I am and why I am? Because I'm here now, and I got this far in my life by surviving. You know, I'm not the best, I'm not the smartest, I'm fastest or whatever. I'm just fitting in somehow. We used to have our powwows. Well, there used to be a baseball field right here, right across the road there. And I used to remember sitting there, and some of these kids were so far ahead of me as far as advanced. You know, I figured eventually I'd learn, which I am. My life really isn't about me, but how I viewed the world and how I fit in, because I knew eventually I was going to fit in somehow, some way, somewhere. The world wasn't mine. It was there to conquer. But for whom? See, that was the question. Where am I going to fit in? When am I going to fit in? How am I going to, blah, 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 you know. So it was a good life for me.
So what's the answer now?
Life. Living life positively.
The powwow has made a smooth transition after its move. Dancers circle the drummers. The drum beat echoes off the walls. I tracked down Shane Drift to ask him about his host drum.
I was requested to be the host drum, one of the host drums, along with Rosemary Barron's drum.
Is there a particular drum song that you play that is meaningful to you?
Yes, it's actually the Drift drum song. It was used back when Walter Drift had it. That was the original drum keeper, maker of it. Back then, when the traditional way, the Indian way, was basically outlawed by the government, they used to pound on their turnover old washtubs, and they'd pound on the washtubs, and people would come, you know, they'd gather and have their own, pull their own little powwows. The drift drum actually is that old washtub that Walter used to use. So the drum itself is very heavy. The drum song itself, it was used for in a ceremony when people were going to service and as they were getting ready to go off to war. Everybody that went through that ceremony and heard that song, all the ones came back from war.
And that's the song that you're not allowed to record?
Nope. That's a song we don't record. So when we do sing a song, we always make that announcement, you know, telling people, because they're not the recorders, don't record this song because this song belongs here to this reservation. Belongs to with the drift drum and this reservation, I should say. With this drum here, the drift drum, that was Walter Drift. That was back from like the 50s and 60s, 50s, I should say. When he passed on, one of my cousins became the drum keeper, and then she ended up having to move away, or was moved away. The house was set on fire where that drum was at. I remember that morning very clearly. One of my cousins kept running across, and because I was sitting up all night, you know, and watching movies, and one of my cousins went running by the window, and I noticed, you know, and I went over and opened up the door. She came in and she said, you know, there's a house fire, and there was two houses over from my house. So I went running over there, and I noticed that the back bedroom was on fire. There was my auntie and my uncle were out there, Karen and Lester. The bedroom was starting to catch more on fire, and I don't know, something just grabbed me or took control of me, and I went running around the house and where the water spigot is, turned it on, and there happened to be a garden hose hooked to it. Grabbed that garden hose, went running back to the bedroom window, tore out the screen, pushed the window open, and there happened to be a tire just leaning up against the house. Climbed up on top of that tire, and I started squirting water in where it was burning. And put it out. You know, there was some damage, smoke damage to the house and a fire damage to the room. But that's how my grandmother became the drum keeper of it. It went from there, passed from my cousin over to her. Then when she passed on back in May, then it came to me, May of 99 when she passed on. I did try to give it over to my auntie Myra, but she said it needs to be with you. It's a big responsibility. You know, you gotta bring it to the ceremonies. When they do ceremonies, like spring ceremonies, you know, when they have feasts, we gotta feast the drum. Change tobacco, you know, take care of it as best you can. Learn about it. After I became the drum keeper, I was with learning how to drum with Gene Goodsky and Henry Wiz Goodsky. And basically, you know, learn from them. But like some people, you know, they have dreams. And when they have a dream, you know, especially a drum keeper, if they have a dream that certain person or persons is supposed to be at that drum, then that's what they do, and they have a ceremony for it.
Did you have a dream?
No, actually, after my grandmother passed on back in May of 99, there was myself, I'm a grandson, and at the time there was my auntie and my uncle, they both decided that the drum should stay with me. So I said, okay, all right, yeah. So then that's how I became a drum keeper.
Late afternoon is here, and the government center is filling up. People are still arriving for Sagi Baga. Out in the hall, vendors sell their jewelry and clothes or give information. And I try to find a quiet or quietish corner to get another powwow story.
Bonjour. My name is Virgil Salm, and here to enjoy the powwow. Been coming to this powwow for probably over 25, almost 30 years, and learned a lot here about the drum and the songs, our cultural teachings from our elders. My first powwow was with my great aunt when I was about 9 or 10 years old at Ball Club, Minnesota. She grabbed me by the hand and said, "Come on, you're going out to dance with me." So I went with her, and she would take me around, and we'd go to the different booths. I didn't have age limits back then. I get to play bingo. I got to do some of the gambling games that were available at the powwow. And I must have been her lucky charm, because I'd walk away with money I didn't have. I was seeing my cousins and making new friends and having fun around the outskirts of the powwow rather than paying attention to what was really going on. Didn't mean a lot to me until later in life. We're wild little Indian kids. That's basically what we had fun. We were there, the adults were there doing their adult business, and children were there, and we had our own ways of inventing fun. And now I'm here because I enjoy the teachings and learn more about the drum, about the heartbeat, and watching our youth be involved, and also to know that we have a need to keep our Anishinaabe Mohin language alive. Apane Agandasoin, always keep studying.
The 2015 Sagi Baga powwow has come and gone. It seems fitting, then, to end this story with Harvey Thompson, whose grandfather's drumming used to gather the Netlake elders together in the evenings of long ago.
I want to ask you, you know, if you were to talk to the younger generation, why are things like powwows and, you know, maybe learning Ojibwe, why are these things important to them?
Well, for one thing, it's our culture. That's the way we're brought, we're taught. And that's the way the Kichimani do, the Great Spirit. He gave us our culture. He gave us our language. So we should live by it. It's just like the Sioux people or Navajo. Even if we're talking about like Chinese people, Asian, black people, God gave them their culture and traditions too to live by. So we need to live by what he gave us. And we can't say there's a lot of people around here now that go to church. It's okay. I mean, people do it anyway, you know, and then there's nothing wrong with that if you want to go that way, you know. But if you're traditional, then hey, I'm going to stick to my traditions and my way. And they say Minobe Madziwin means living the good life. That's our way.
This is Britt Ahmet for KBFT, Boys for Tribal Radio. This special edition of Minnesota Native News is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.